This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you, Sabrina, for the news. It is 12:04 on this 17th of July, 2019. My name is Rich Bradbury. This is Enterprise Biz Bytes. Today, I'm in the studio with...
Jeff Sandu.
Arvindu Braj.
And as usual, our producer of the day is Christine Wong. She is with us all the way through until 1 o'clock as well today. If you want to get in touch, 018-789-8899. Twitter or Instagram, we're at BFM Radio. Topic of the day, then. Arv has a story about how there is... Is this Spotify are basically using us and making it feel as though we have ownership of things we don't actually have ownership over.
Yeah, it's like physical ownership versus psychological ownership.
Psychological ownership, right. So our question today is then, how important is it for you to actually own physical content? We're talking about stuff like Blu-rays, vinyls, posters, I would say CDs or DVDs, but then I get a flurry of messages saying, who buys CDs and DVDs anymore, like we did last time? But that's what we're going with. You know, so all of that kind of stuff. Let us know how important it is to you and why. 018-789-8899 is the number to get us at. That is story number one and what we are leading with. We are then moving on to gardening games are blossoming in turbulent times. Jeff's story, that, you know. Wrapping up with invasion of the electric scooter. So, Arv, take it away.
Yeah, so this is basically about how companies are making you work for them by making you feel like you own their products without actually giving you any ownership of anything that they own. It's something called psychological ownership because the way we own things nowadays is changing. Many of us don't all own physical things like physical movies or physical music, physical albums. Most of the stuff we have is in a virtual space. So we have like playlists on Spotify, we have our own personalized lists on Netflix, we have our books on Amazon's Kindle or any other book service online, and these are the things that we own, right? There's no way for us to display these things in like bookshelves or in the bedroom or at home and stuff. And because of that, it feels like these things are like an extension of us or our personality. And these companies know that. It is something that they brand, or it's branded by where this article came from, as psychological ownership, because you don't really own any of these things. They are still owned by the digital platforms. They are still bound by licensing and legal rights and stuff. And they can remove the content whenever they want.
Yeah, they don't have to ask you.
They don't have to ask
like,
you. Yeah.
Hey, Arvin, can we actually remove this song from your playlist? Because this song is not going to... you know, we don't have licensing for this song anymore. And
with
you know,
that as well, they can also add songs.
They can add songs.
Yeah. They can do whatever they want to do without asking you the permission.
Yeah, because all you're doing is you are paying for a premium to use their service. Yeah. You're not paying to keep that on your platform, anything like that. There is zero ownership on your part, but because you are so close to the service, you feel like you own the service itself. For example, when you have this sort of feeling on like Spotify, Netflix and stuff, you are willing to pay for it willingly, so you will pay a premium even when they jack up the price. You will still pay the extra premium because you need to have these things on your phone, on your computers, in your life. You will donate to it if you have to. So this comes to like stuff like Wikipedia.
They
run on donations and stuff. A lot of people use Wikipedia, and because they feel like they are so close to the service, they are willing to donate to it every year. And you will also defend it among your peers. Like when someone goes like, you know, I don't need to use Spotify. I can delete it off my phone. I rarely use it. You'll defend it by saying, no, because it gives you free music. You can stream it. Why do you pay a premium price? Because it's higher quality. You know, I can shuffle my playlists. You know, I can get access to like other artists and stuff. You will defend paying for services because you feel like it's something you bought. It's like if someone asks me like, why do you still buy Blu-rays? It's old school to buy physical media, but I will defend it by saying, oh, because it's super clear and I can see details. There's no like downgrading. I can watch it whenever I want, even if my internet is down, stuff like that, even though I know that it's an outdated practice to buy Blu-rays. So there are a couple of ways. There are like three ways how these services sort of encourage psychological ownership. So one of it is control. There is research that has shown that people get satisfaction by changing their surroundings or by sort of like customizing their surroundings. It's why people have like Discover Weekly playlists. Like why you love the Discover Weekly, because it's customized for you. It's so personalized to your music tastes that you feel like the service is working in your favor. Netflix, when they suggest shows for you, that's also customization. And you can customize themes. So you can customize like a dark mode. You can customize colors, profile pictures. So much so that it becomes your Apple Music or your Spotify, your streaming service, when it actually isn't. Self-identity is the second one. So this is like people putting posters on their walls, people displaying their books, people displaying their vinyls. Mm. It's just a reflection of who you are as a person.
Just to go back to your other one as well, it's stuff like, if somebody starts logging into your Spotify or logging into your Netflix and messes up your algorithm, you get annoyed.
You get annoyed,
right?
Yeah,
because it's like shuffling your CD collection and moving things out of place or moving your books around, you know. And
if you've put them according to like author or genre
or whatever,
Because you don't want to see stuff that you don't like in the pile, in the list. So that is self-identity. And the third one, the last one, is sense of home. So when you use the digital services, you leave digital breadcrumbs or footprints behind. So these are your memories on Facebook, your tweet streams on Twitter, your time capsules on Spotify, your algorithms on Netflix, and your albums and movies on iTunes or Apple Music, your libraries that you curate. So it basically becomes like your virtual bedroom or your virtual living room or your virtual space, basically. A safe space that reflects who you are as a person. And because of this, you think that you own the service. And in return, when you have that feeling, services get you to pay premiums. That's the most obvious one, so revenue. But also, they get data. So that's the most important thing. When you are willing to feel like the service is an extension of yourself, then you're willing to do surveys, you're willing to give them feedback, you're willing to rate them on the Play Store and or any other platform they're on, and they collect data when you do this. The more you use the service, the more they get to know about you and people like you. So the service grows.
And the idea of stuff like giving it a thumbs up if you like a particular song or giving it a start, whatever it is.
Do you do that on Netflix? Like when you watch a movie, how often do you thumbs up? No?
I did previously when they had a bit more of a granular rating system before. I think you could star it 1 to 5 stars or something previously, you know. And now that seems to have disappeared. When you could rate it 1 to 5 stars or whatever it was, I'll do that, you know, because I think that at the time helped. Now it's just the thumbs up kind of thumbs down thing. And I don't really see the benefit of that very often.
I do it every time.
Really?
Every time I do it.
Has it helped?
I don't know if it's helped, but I do it because I feel like I need to sort of tell the system what I want to watch next. Mm. So I'll definitely give it like a thumbs up or thumbs down every time.
So every time you give a thumbs up or a thumbs down, it helps with the algorithm to suggest you better movies the next time round. So how often have you been putting a thumbs down to the movies that they've recommended to you after, you know, you've been doing this for a fair bit of time now, right?
Hardly ever.
Yeah?
Hardly ever
a thumbs down for the ones that they recommend to you.
Yeah, I always thumbs down the stuff that I look for on my own. The stuff that they recommend to me, it's always a thumbs up.
Because you don't know yourself better, right? Because Netflix.
Yeah. Because they know what I've been watching. It is scary.
Yeah, but like, you know, going back to the whole messing about with your own kind of playlist that you have or, you know, your own preferences and stuff, right? So I've, you know, just talking about Netflix and my first, you know, paid subscription to this kind of world was I think one of the first was Netflix. And immediately I was, you know, telling my mom about it. I was like, hey, you know, so maybe now we can sort of like cut off our cable provider and we could, you know, use Netflix because they've got a whole bunch of variety in there. It's got TV shows, got movies, and even in movies they've got, you know, in a whole bunch of different languages, right? So, and my mom, she's a big fan of the Bollywood film category. And you know, immediately we signed on to my TV, and you know, we were going through the whole category in the Bollywood films and stuff, and you know, for like the next week or so, she was just consuming all Bollywood films and stuff, right? Bear in mind that this is like my first time signing into Netflix ever, and I actually couldn't get rid of that algorithm after that. No offense to Bollywood films, though. Like, you know, I it's just not my cup of cha. But like, it's you know, I had to actually create a separate you know, account
profile,
within the the separate profile just to start off fresh again, because you know, I wanted to consume different kinds of content. And also it's really difficult when someone plays around with it and you can't. Whereas in physical space, it's different, right? You just go like, you just rearrange, and that feeling of rearranging kind of makes me feel nice. You know?
Yeah, it's like it's cathartic. You know what goes where. You know what you. And it's like I was saying to Arv off air. I mean, There's beauty on both sides. There's beauty on owning things like vinyl and CDs, DVDs, whatever, because they evoke memories. You know, they can be nostalgic. Mm-hmm. You can be going through the CDs or your DVDs or whatever, your LPs, and you have that moment of, I loved listening to that album. There it is. I can take it out. I can look at the artwork, and it evokes that memory immediately, and you can find it. Digital, of course, doesn't give you that. It might give you a little bit of a nostalgic kick in your head, but you don't get that physical, tangible touching of something, you know. And I think there's that disconnect between the two. Now, a little bit after the break, we'll be talking about, you know, why and some of the things that we hold on to and why we do that, you know, and why we kind of hold it dear. But part of the reason I do it is just simply because I used to move around a lot and it wasn't logistically possible to move around my collections with me.
There is beauty in the physical kind of objects and the things, but there is convenience in
the
digital world. Yeah.
We are going to take a short break. Music coming up now from Phoenix with Everything Is Everything. If you'd like to get in touch, of course, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Get us on Twitter or Instagram at BFM Radio. You work for Spotify, you just don't know it. Our question, how important is it for you to own physical content? Blu-rays, vinyls, posters? Let us know. We'll be right back. BFM 89.9.
Bring forth money. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. I'm Rich Bradbury in the studio with
Arvind Viraj
and Jeff Sunday.
We are talking about how important it is for you to own physical content. We're talking about Blu-rays, vinyls, posters, all stuff that
books.
Yes, all stuff that you consume as opposed to digital or streaming content. We've asked for your feedback, 018-789-8899 on WhatsApp, Twitter, or Instagram. We're at BFM Radio. We've had a couple of tweets. Over to Twitter with Arv.
Yeah, so this comes from Arif Azhar, who says, who doesn't want to collect investments? Rare vinyl costs an arm and a leg. So this is from a business perspective.
Yes.
It makes sense. I know a lot of individuals who've like asked me to buy some rare vinyls and LPs when I went to the States, and you know, because in LA and San Fran, they've got a whole bunch of record stores, and you can find some really nice gems in there. And they've requested, like, can you buy it? And I was like, oh, I didn't know you listened to this. It's like, oh no, it's like, it's just really hard to find in KL. They're like, okay, you're just keeping it for your collection because it's, you know, to put it on the wall, and you never know, right? In 20 years from now, that may actually cost a lot.
Could fetch a price,
I remember walking into the attic in my parents' house years ago and uncovering all of the Beatles albums on vinyl.
Wow.
And just going, okay, I'll save that. Yeah. And not because I'm never going to play it. You know, I'd want to maybe once. Perhaps just to
try
kind
it out.
Of,
but comic books have that effect, you know, on being a huge investment opportunity when you have the first editions and stuff, right? Even books as well, right? The first editions when you go to bookstores in anywhere, literally, right? You will find gems that are, you know, put into this, you know, bookcase, and they've kept in a ideal temperature and stuff because these are so rare. But you know, if you just get a Kindle or, you know, some ebook reader or even your phone, you could have the same copy and stuff.
Okay, well, let's have a chat about that and around this then. So in the studio, we know there are technically three generations here. We've got Christian over here, we've got you two, and we've got me. And
you're the youngest of us all.
I'm the youngest of us all, right? I kind of stem from a period before digitization, you know, when there were vinyl, there were tapes, there were 8 tracks, and then it moved into, you know, CDs, DVDs, MP3s, whatever. You know? So I've kind of seen that whole gamut, and I've collected LPs, I've collected CDs, I've collected DVDs, and
cassettes.
All of that. Yeah. And I started digitizing my stuff before I moved to China, strictly because I couldn't obviously carry that collection around with me. Had I wanted to, perhaps I might have done. But it was the convenience of being able to carry, you know, 800, 900, 1,000 CDs in one little hard drive, you know, and I could then access that library wherever I wanted. Mm-hmm. And that was great. And then, of course, came along streaming, and I no longer even needed in my head to carry around that hard drive because it's like, oh, if I could think of a song and I could find it on Spotify or whatever, there it is. I can access it from wherever I am in the world.
It started, like, I guess for me, it was Winamp. You know, when Winamp came and you
it
could...
It really,
you know,
whips the llamas.
Well, you're the voice. But it was, yeah, it was Winamp that really changed my life when I moved from CDs. And then, you know, you could, you had Winamp. So what I used to do was just to save my CDs into an MP3 file using some software. You know, I can't remember what was the software called, but I used to save every track as an MP3. And then iTunes came along that made it a lot easier to rip the CD into MP3s. But I would still use Winamp, and, you know, because you could have, like, you know, just... You could play around with the equalizer,
yeah, and you had the visualizer
of it, the
thing.
Visual.
Yeah.
I would full screen it. I'll turn off the lights, and then I'll go to bed while playing.
You can
playing,
download, like, skins.
Yeah,
and,
yeah, like, yeah, you know, yeah. I love that personalization, and it made me feel like I owned Winamp.
Which is really interesting because Christine echoes that with how physical objects can be personalized in a way. You know, files can't. You can sign, have books signed. You can have CDs on your your stickers on CD covers. All of that kind of stuff. You can't do that with digital
one
stuff.
Of my best things. One of the best things that I own is WrestleMania 25 DVDs. It's one of those booklets where you can open up it as four flaps. Mm. And I got Ricky the Dragon Steamboat to sign it. And it's like on the front panel. And he was on the show. Mm. And he got to sign in. He's, you know, like, he has like legend status and stuff. So it's one of the nicest things that I own just because I was able to get him to sign it. And now it's pretty much one of a kind because I have a disc or a set that's signed by him. And it's not the same as every other disc that's out there.
Mm.
So it's those kinds of things as well. It's that kind of customization that you cannot get, I think, with digital media.
I mean, it's interesting because are we at that stage now where, you know, younger people are starting to collect vinyl again? You know, they're starting to buy retro stuff, if you like, in a kind of ironic-ish kind of way, I guess it is.
I do. I collect vinyls.
Yeah, and Arv collects movie posters as well.
Movie posters,
right?
Yeah. So the reason why I did that was I actually bought a couple of vinyls before having a player.
Mm.
And the reason why was, you know, it started through, interestingly enough, it was, you know, Radiohead was launching like a new album. I think it was the In Rainbows album. And, you know, you had like a bundle package. And one of the bundle package that I thought was interesting was you get like this limited edition In Rainbows vinyl, and I go like, oh no, that's cool, that's like another like $30 extra. So I thought, you know what, I'll buy that because it looks really nice. And then it just started, like, I remember having like nearly five or six different vinyls before having the player. And then I invested in a player, and now I just can't stop buying vinyls. And in terms of prized collection, like, besides my Radiohead limited edition stuff, the biggest or the most expensive prized collection I have is the complete 11 seasons and 200 and plus or 201 or 206 episodes of The X-Files.
Whoa.
In a box set.
DVD.
It's on DVD, yes.
Wow.
Yeah. So that is like, you know, really old school, very far back, found in the US and weighs like a ton. But yeah, like, you know, 200, I think, I can't remember, it's like 50 over disc. Yeah,
I might have to borrow that off you at some
set.
Time.
Yeah. We have a couple of clips from Shan Lindley. She is from, this is from TEDx East End, and she is a social scientist at Microsoft Research. And she sort of touches on the difference between physically owning something and digitally owning something.
Although simple, I can do a number of actions with this book that can underpin quite a rich set of experiences. So, for example, I could gift this book to a friend, or I could loan it to them, I could swap it with them. I could bequeath it to a family member, I could throw it into this audience, or I could leave it on the tube. These actions, while simple, they just don't translate with digital content, so it can be very difficult to gift digital content, to lend it, to bequeath it. Transferring ownership, relinquishing possession, these things become complicated. And I think this is because the actions that we designed around our computer files, the grammar of action that was designed for the computer file, was designed for a world that didn't have the internet, that didn't have cloud computing, that didn't have social network services. So actions that we're so familiar with, copy, delete, become complex in a networked world. They don't readily translate. Copies proliferate, they're seen as cheapened. Delete really loses its salience in an online context. If we could repackage our digital content in new ways, we draw new boundaries around it, what actions would you wish to support? And how would those actions underpin your sense of ownership over it and play into the ways that we can interact with each other? It's my belief that it's time to redraw the boundaries around our digital content such that some are open to all, some are closed to oneself, and some are available for giving and receiving. It's my belief it's time to redesign the file and what we can do with it.
Isn't that what Dropbox does?
Kind of.
Right.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. In a way. We didn't actually touch on if this is a good thing or a bad thing, like the psychological ownership.
You mean hoarding, as some people might call
digital
it?
Digital hoarding, yeah.
I do that too, have
they
done that.
They can live side by side. I don't think one triumphs the other. Just like how I ventured into this, like it was, you know, from a digital, I wanted the digital copy, I wanted the MP3 of the album, but then I thought, the vinyl makes sense too, and that's what I do now. And I think they can live side by side.
Yeah, because I think I psychologically own Spotify, and I don't see any problem in that. Like I will say, I'll tell you, like I don't, if you ask me the one thing I want to take to like a desert island, like what I couldn't survive without is Spotify.
Right.
Like I will need my Spotify, and I don't see the harm in that.
And giving like, you know, I think back in the days, like when you walk into your room or if you just see a person out in the streets, you can see, like, you know, in the room you've got your disc and your posters, you go like, oh, you like this, right? But right now I think it's a bit difficult to identify, but we can still, you know, buy t-shirts that is of your favorite band or book or movie and stuff like that. And, you know,
still seeing less and less of that, though.
Still seeing less than that. But, like, you know, even like Marvel, when they launched the new Avengers movies, like, you see a lot of people going out to the cinema and then they're all wearing their Marvel kind of t-shirts and stuff. And all. So you're like, oh, at least some identity in the physical world that you're still trying to portray, even though it's all digital these days.
A couple of things we've not really touched on that maybe we might do later on throughout the show is stuff like video games. You know, Steam is a big proponent of the idea of, like, you kind of owning stuff, but not necessarily. The PlayStation Store, I know you can have digital content from there as well. I believe Xbox do this as well in some parts of the world. Now, if you'd like to get in touch and talk to us about how important it is for you to own physical content, do let us know. We're talking about Blu-rays, vinyls, posters, books, all of these kind of things. Do you prefer the physical content or do you prefer the digital content? Let us know. WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Twitter or Instagram, we're at BFM Radio. Music coming up from Bread, Everything I Own, here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.